Okay. This is the last presentation where I'm going to cover pitfalls and dangers that you need to watch out when you are running and designing games. Hopefully, I'm going to finish this in about half an hour. We finished today at 5:45, is it? So there's plenty of time for questions. You should have all know what you'll be doing during the game lab tomorrow. I will be coming in here to run the games, and we'll see. If nobody turns up, then I'll go and wander around game lab. Because after a day of presenting, I'm going to be really knackered, and I'm not going to be running a game. Well, I will be running a game because I've got the cyber game, which somebody wants me to do when we're here. So there will be games taking place up here if you want to come back and have a go. Okay. Pitfalls and dangers. It's all very well of me to say how fantastic wargaming is, and if you design a game, everyone will love you, and you'll have that wonderful moment where the guy goes, the game's not realistic because North Korea and South Korea would never get together over the Olympics, and you go, yes, that's fantastic. That doesn't happen very often. The reason I'm so pleased about that anecdote is because it did happen. It's because it's unusual. There are a lot of things that can go wrong with a game, and I'm going to cover a few of them. The first one is your boss. I want the game to prove we need more ships. I want the game to prove we need more of a certain type of missile. A direct quote from an Air Vice Marshal. Okay? Well, we're not having a war game. We're not going to learn anything for it. It's just his pet project. So he's going to distort the game to say the results of the game are we need more missiles. In the US, they have a thing called the Defense Wargaming Alignment Group, which was part of Secretary Bob Work's initiative. Every time they run a game, the report of the game goes to the DWAG. The DWAG has a council of colonels from the Air Force, the Navy, the Army, and the Marine Corps. Full colonels. They read the report. If your report said, I need more missiles, you'll be sacked. Not really. They'll send a report back saying, you're a fatuous idiot. Everyone knows we need more missiles. Of course we need more missiles. And we need more men. And we need more aircraft and tanks. What we want to know is, you didn't have enough missiles. What did you do about it? What amazing, inventive, imaginative thing did you do to compensate for your lack of missiles? That's why we're wargaming. So we've got to be very careful about having a boss with a mission. You need to clear with the boss what he thinks the game's going to achieve, how it's going to achieve it, preferably in writing, so that when he changes his mind at the end, or says the game proved this when it didn't, you can hold him to account. What are we trying to achieve? Can this be achieved by a game? Is it necessary to have a game? Will the game meet the objectives? And will playing to win break the game? It's very important. Are we doing a training game in order to make sure we are practicing procedures? Those sorts of games, it's important that we practice all of the procedures. And if someone plays to win, derails the game after 25 minutes, we're not going to do the procedures. And therefore, the training value will be lost. If you've got plenty of time, you can reset and do it again. But you need to be clear. So Exercise Millennium Challenge, when Colonel Van Riper sank the carrier in the first few hours and said, yes, it's brilliant. And then the carrier was refloated and he got very angry. And there's all sorts of articles about it. What was the purpose of the game? The game was not an adversarial war game looking to find out where the weakness in the carriers are. It was a procedural war game intended to train people in what they were supposed to do. Sinking the carrier meant 300 people will be sitting around twiddling their thumbs for the rest of the week. Context, it's important. Next, the scenario. Are we going to have a real world scenario or are we going to have magical unicorns? You know, it's really important. You get people saying, don't fight the white. It's a very common thing in the military. We have a scenario. It says this. The players are going, hang on a minute. This is ridiculous. It's absolutely stupid. No one would do that. And then you, no, don't fight the white. You say, well, hang on. You're asking me to come from a position that only an insane man would come to. Okay, well. Yeah, it's a bit more likely nowadays, given the political situation, than it used to be. But if you get the scenario wrong, it can be embarrassing. You can have missing information in the scenario, which the control is not experienced enough to make up on the fly. Now, if you've been wargaming all your life, you can make up a shed load of stuff and rely on your experience to make it consistent and allow the objectives to be met. That's great. I was once asked at the headquarters arc, the planners came in and said, we need an ethnic composition map of this territory. And I'd only just arrived. And the guy in charge of that exercise wasn't there. And these guys said they needed it in 4 hours. So I got a map out, and I got one of those transparent pieces of acetate, and I knew where the ethnic whatever Redlanders were, and I drew a couple of bits, and then I stood up, and I looked at the map, and I dropped my pen. And it bounced across the map, doo, 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 making big blobs. And it was a permanent marker, and I thought, oh, shit. And then I thought, hang on a minute, I'll have little enclaves. And I made them into little enclaves. And then I gave them the map. Oh my God, I was a genius. They came back and they were worshipping at my feet because it was the most difficult, challenging thing to have to cope with these enclaves. This was before Garajda and everything else. I didn't panic when I dropped the pen. I made it up and I was able to make stuff up consistently and sufficiently quickly to make it up faster than they could ask the questions. You can provide them with too much information, so the decision is obvious. You can have a briefing that is so enormous the guys slip into a coma and they just don't read it. Or you can give them options that are way too small. So it's either A or B, and we're not getting meaningful decisions. The guys just choose A or B. So things in the scenario that could go wrong, you've got to be a little bit careful. The rules. These are the fast play, simplified rules for advanced squad leader. Okay? If you Google advanced squad leader, you get all sorts of pictures of like a billion counters. It's a joke. You need to be careful. You need to be consistent in adjudication. And if the players go, look, that just wouldn't happen, then how are you going to deal with that? You have to be able to provide a justification with evidence as to why that it would or why it wouldn't. Because nothing breaks the bubble more than having a completely unrealistic result. It might be, don't fight the white, this is what's happened, because it will derail the rest of the exercise. Well, if it is a training game where they're doing procedures, Congratulations, enemy. You've broken the game to the point when the player, where the controllers come in and said, stop doing what you're doing. You're breaking the exercise. At that point, congratulations. Well done, enemy. You've succeeded. Now, go back to being targets for them to complete their procedures. Don't get precious about it. That's not your job. Some of the assumptions in the game might not be understood why they were there. It says in the rules you can't do that, and the guy goes, but I did it last week in Afghanistan. So the rules are stupid. You have to be able to adjust. If it happened in real life, then it has to have a probability of happening, however small. You can't take an hour to make a decision. You've got to be able to adjudicate quickly. We have entire sessions on in-stride adjudication in some of the deep dives. You have to be able to explain why someone's won or lost. This is fundamental. Computers don't tell you why. Wargaming should tell you why. Tomorrow, there is a panel on the psychology of wargaming. The Norwegian guy who will be presenting, the poster child of wargaming, has specific reasons why manual wargaming gives you the why and how important it is. And the other thing, of course, is adjudicators get intimidated. I stood up at a large-scale game. It's a divisional-level exercise. We have a brigadier general who is in charge of the exercise control. It was supposed to run on a computer simulation, but the computer broke. I'd already agreed with the general, with the brigadier, that if the computer broke, we would run it manually. So I'm standing in the middle of this big map, saying to the guys, we're going to run it manually. This is how it's going to run. There's a cavalry officer there who is extremely obnoxious and goes, what do you know about it? Because I'm in the Royal Logistic Corps. And he's a cavalry officer. The brigadier leant across the table and said, shut the fuck up and do as you're told. It went very well after that. Watch out for intimidation. Make sure you've got top cover. Facilities. Not saying that some of the facilities outside this door, but yeah. Infrastructure and life support. Lunch is important. If we're running a war game in here and then we say you've got an hour to go and forage for lunch, the bubble of the game is going to be broken. Ed McGrady, very, very experienced, had a 45-minute lecture on why lunch is important and why you need to give it to the players at their point where they're playing. If the facilities are inadequate, if they're completely inappropriate. I've had to give a game once which was at a school, and the school was for very small children. All of the table, the chairs you're sitting on, they just didn't work. Okay? If you have a game structure that absolutely depends on everybody being here all the time, and somebody nips out for a pee, and we all have to twiddle our thumbs until he gets back, that can be a problem. Okay? And the other one, of course, is this breaking the bubble. You know, if someone's there and they go, yeah, I'm going to have to take my, I'm going to have to leave my phone on. You know, I'm going to have to nip out every 5 minutes. Then the game's not going to work. Okay. Another thing that goes wrong is the players. You know, I'm bored. I have better things to do. Okay. Sorry. You know, I have taken part in a very large scale exercise where one of the players came up to me and said, the logistics. I'm an officer in a certain army, and you've told me I'm the logistics guy. And I've said, yes, absolutely. So the game caters for logistics at a low level. When you've run out of logistics, there is a decision to be made at a higher level as to whether it's realistic to assume whether a ship would have arrived with the ammunition and everything else. That's your job. Well, no, I would know whether a ship's available. No, you have to make a decision as to whether that's reasonable. You're the expert on logistics. Well, 45 minutes later, I'm still arguing with this guy. And it's basically, look, if this guy wants strategic level logistics, he's going to turn up to you with a chit. You're going to sign it to say, yes, that's reasonable, and we'll carry on. I've spent 45 minutes talking to you. There's 3,000 people involved, and there is now a queue of like 20 or 30 people waiting to ask me questions. You are too stupid to understand this. I'm sorry. It's not your fault you've been placed in that position. You're obviously extremely good at your job. You wouldn't be at the rank you are if you weren't. But I'm asking you to come up with something that is cognitively outside of your sphere. I call it stupid because I can do that, but actually that's unfair on you. But I'm sorry, I literally can't spend any more time with you. Off he goes, thoroughly confused. I go and find some senior officer to go, and then I come back with a bottle of wine and apologize afterwards because I was about to tear my hair out because the entire exercise with thousands of people was grinding to a halt because of one guy. You have to be careful. Unqualified for the role they're doing. The other thing is players not feeling they're in control. Earlier, with that Air Force game, you were grappling with it, and then I said, right, I want you to do this, and you were like, well, hang on, we haven't decided that. And that is bad, because that point in the game, you suddenly go, I was beginning to grab it, and now I'm out, I have no idea what's going on. And there's a classic example. Fortunately, I can spot it. Now, the other thing, of course, is alpha players. Players who are determined to win, they're going to cheat no matter what. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, people who are determined to win. General Hackett took part in a TV program where he was playing Napoleon, up against General Kisley, who was playing Wellington. At one stage in the program, they discovered General Hackett with his ear to the door, listening to what was going on. That's great. I just love that. You know, it's not necessarily wrong. They would have intelligence. But, you know, when you've got a general who wants to win, he was good. You have to be careful with alpha players and cheats. There's two types of cheating. One of the things I find really interesting is people say to me, at the end of the Staff College program, we're going to do a war game. That's great. The war game is unbelievably boring and stressful. It's a turn-based game. So you do your planning. You guys are in a cell. You're coming up with a brilliant plan. But at the end of it, you brief it. It goes into the computer, ping. Okay, you're in a new situation. You have to do the planning again. So you do 4 hours planning. You explain it. And 5 minutes later, you've got to do another 4 hours planning. Oh, my God. Now, what would make it more interesting is if it was A div against B div. And a lot of the directing staff go, oh, no, we can't have that. And I go, why not? Well, all they want to do is win. We're not teaching knitting. That's what we want. You're here to cut the other guy's heart out and eat it. Otherwise, you're a sucker. Sorry, that's what war is. Oh, yeah, but they'll cheat. We're not teaching knitting. There's cheating and what people think is cheating. There's cheating as in, I'll go around the back of the scenes, as they're about to put their orders into the computer, I'll just cut the wire so they can't. That's cheating as in destroying the game. There's the other type, which people think is cheating. We had a game where you could lay mines. And when you put mines, you put where you were laying the mines, and then you put in a variable. And the variable was zero if you're laying the mines on the surface. That meant you could lay them quickly, but you killed less enemy because they could see them. If you put in that variable minus one, then the mines were underground. It was much slower to lay them, but the enemy couldn't see them, so you caused more casualties. So what does the army guy do? He goes, what happens if I put plus one? Well, you lay the mines in the sky and you blow up the helicopters. Oh, you know, that's ridiculous. No, hang on a minute. I've presented you a model of the world, and you've been tasked to beat the other guy in that model. You're examining the ways of doing it. Okay, it sounds a bit ridiculous laying mines in the sky. Except when I was in Bosnia, all of the helicopters had to fly above 900 feet because the Serbs were planting Claymore mines pointing upwards with tripwires heading off in all directions. So if you came in low in your helicopter, the ground wash would blow twigs and stuff into the tripwires and the mine would blow up your helicopter. So it isn't necessarily stupid. You've been given a problem to solve. You've been given an environment to solve it. That's not cheating. Next time we do the game, I'll make sure there's a check in the software so you can't put plus one. But so you may think you know how your equipment is going to work in the next fight. You are wrong. You can absolutely guarantee that your equipment is not all going to work in the way that you think it is. Being able to solve a problem by examining all of the variables and coming up with a way of beating the other guy is absolutely legitimate. Yes?
Yeah. Isn't there a danger that in a game scenario, people will make ethical decisions which they wouldn't make in real life?
That's very interesting. In some cases, they do. But again, what is the purpose of the game? If we're there to look at ethical decisions, so for example, one of the games that I'm due to work on, we're doing a Cobra level committee making decision. At the moment, it's based on a nuclear proliferation scenario. The next scenario that I'm writing is based on human augmentation. Now, of course, if we're being ethical, we're talking about exoskeletons, we're talking about night vision, contact lenses and stuff like that. If I'm on the other side, I'm going, I want to alter the guy's brain chemistry. I want to make him, I can't remember the term, but people who don't forget anything. So I've got a person I can send anywhere and they literally will remember everything that they've seen. I want to alter their brain chemistry so that the person is functionally autistic in a way that means they can concentrate on a problem for hours and hours at a stretch. Those sorts of things are actually not beyond the possible. Particularly if you represent a regime that is prepared to experiment on hundreds of people and go, well, we got two or three that can remember everything, and these guys are now, well, you know, sorry. So what's the purpose of the game? It may be to examine those ethical decisions, and in which case it's very important. In other areas, the ethical decisions come across as a second or third order consequence. So at Connections USA, we were examining fighting in cities. And an awful lot of the discussion assumed that all the civilians had left. And it's like, that's crazy. That'll never happen. I mean, we had a dam about to burst in Britain. You know, a big dam is going to blow away all the houses. There, everyone's going to... No, I'm not leaving my house. But it's like, what do you do? Well, we're not going to send the police in and forcibly drag them away. So it's your choice if you want to stay there. But if the dam goes, you're going to die. You know, I'm sorry, civilian population is really important and it needs to be brought out of these exercises. And far too many of them assume that we're in an environment where the civilians aren't there. So So yeah, it's very important. The ethical considerations for Western forces give you rules and procedures you have to obey, which are quite different to the enemy. So we have a cyber exercise where you represent Redland and you're cyber sabotaging Blueland's military port. Then at the end of it, we have a discussion on the ethics, because one of the roots of the cyber sabotage results in people dying. And then they go, well, I'm playing red. I didn't say red was the Russians, you know. Oh. So do you think you've gone too far if you were actually playing the British government? Oh, yes. Well, now we're getting a proper conversation. The other thing, of course, is preconceived notions about how the game's going to play. Not an awful lot of senior officers have been exposed to the full range of wargaming. If you say I'm having a war game, they are convinced in their mind that it's going to be a seminar game, therefore I don't need to read any of the briefings, I'll just turn up on the day. It's turn up on the day and suddenly he realises he's going to have to make a load of decisions in front of a group of subordinates, and if he gets it wrong, he's going to lose, then you can get some very serious problems with players. Control. That's you. Control can get it wrong. If you have junior controllers who go, yeah, I'm going to have to check with the boss on that one. You're running a mega game, and a player comes up with a suggestion, and you're not confident enough to make it up within that bubble, I need to speak to the guy who designed the mega game, then that can be very dangerous. It slows everything down. Some controllers get a bit carried away and make huge decisions that affect the whole game without making sure the boss knows. You can try and run a game with not enough controllers. Jim Woolman is able to run a game of 400 players with 15 controllers. Do not try that without a lifetime's experience. You will probably need more. Jim's first version of the game with 130 players had 35 controllers. That's a huge proportion. Most military training takes place with one-to-one ratios for headquarters training. So we will have 60 people in the control and training a headquarters of 60 people. That's very common, one-to-one ratio. Controller experience, are they able to fit their work in the bubble? Controllers distracted by things that interest them. Controllers disagreeing. And controllers not flexible enough to adjust. Jerry, who you all saw walking around at the back, very experienced controller. But Jerry's personality type is, the game is designed to work like this. If halfway through the game we go, it's not working fast enough, we're just going to change it, that's difficult for Jerry. If you want a game where you need the logistics to work, you need Jerry. Because he's got that sort of mind that can sort it out. It's picking the right guys for the right job. Very important. Observers. You need to record what's happening in order to get results. One of the big things is the observer rushing in and go, you made a decision. I want a 20-page dissertation on why you made that decision. And there's nothing that screws up the flow of a game than obtrusive observers inserting their probes where they're not necessarily appropriately positioned. You can have observers who are obviously unqualified. They're just filling in tick boxes and have no idea. So when the guy goes, what did you mean by that question? They don't know. Distracting the players, as I've covered. Senior observers, You get a general sitting in, leaning over your shoulder, it's going to affect play. That's not always a bad thing. They've done some physiological studies about fear. So people are genuinely frightened and have been wired up. That has an effect on your body. Wiring someone up and having the boss's boss standing over you with a noteboard saying, right, you're going to do the next task, that can engender the same physiological effect as fear, even though you're not worried he's going to shoot you. So sometimes it can be useful. If you've got someone who's completely unfazed by it all, and you feel that you want to stress him a bit, then bring out the big guns and get them to watch what they're doing. And they can very much reduce immersion in some cases. The other thing is with regard to forms, if you're planning a game in which you want to gather the data, and you go, right, I must have everything written. And the game format involves a lot of diplomacy, which would be long-term relationships built up. People will be negotiating over cups of coffee, and you're forcing the guy to fill in a 10-page form every time he wants to do something. That reduces the appropriate immersion in the game. So somebody who's joining you from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and you're trying to capture that the information for the report, forcing him to do something which is completely outside of experience will mess up his immersion in the game. Okay, analysis. What does the game really prove? If the game proves we need more missiles, that's probably the wrong answer, as I explained earlier. What did we do because we didn't have enough missiles is the right answer. So, problems with analysis is when the game has a predetermined outcome and it's not really a game. When you have adjudication by the controllers which is not recorded, where you find out that part of the game is operating to a different set of assumptions because the adjudicator said, yes, you can do that, that's realistic. And over the other side, some adjudicator has said, no, you can't do that because it's not in the rules. So suddenly, you find that two halves of the game become unbalanced. A rejection of inconvenient truths. Stephen Downs Martin is here. If you go and talk to him, he will tell you a litany of games where at the end of the game, people have ignored the unpleasant and uncomfortable in the report because they don't want to upset people. Sponsors say they want the report tomorrow. So what happens is you do a game, you do a hot wash up, and then you write a 2-page first impression report and send it out. And that's it. The sponsor's off. I love it. Of course, you then go through the full analysis and you have more time to consider and you find out actually the results of the game are a bit more subtle than that. Too late. It's gone. The sponsor's on his way. You give him the report and he just goes, thanks, and throws it in the bin. Analysis that is done based on what they think the players are doing. When in actual fact, if you ask the players, you may find out something completely different. And of course, unqualified or unsuitable analysts. That's always a danger. Politics. Always a problem. It's a NATO game, make the Turks look good. This is not a joke. We were doing a game in Headquarters Arc, which was Allied Command Europe Rapid Reaction Corps, and we had the Germans, we had the British, we had the Turkish, and we had the Spanish taking part in the game. The general said to me, we have a problem. The Turks have the Leopard 1. It's a completely obsolete tank by now. How do we make sure that the Turkish division doesn't look stupid in front of everyone else? To which I said, General, I've already thought about this. There is a vehicle in the database called Turkish Leopard 1 with IFCS, Improved Fire Control System. It's actually a Leopard 2, which I've just polished off the name. The general said to me, but a Leopard 1 has a 105mm gun and the Leopard 2 has a 120mm smoothbore. Wow. What are you going to do about the ammunition? Well, I said, don't worry, I've got Turkish ammunition in there to make the Turks look good. Is that important? Is it honest? It was General Jackson. I wasn't going to argue with him. What are we trying to achieve? In that same exercise, the plan the Brits came up was use up all the foreigners and then fight the decisive blow with one UK armoured division, the most powerful armoured division in the world. The German players were not stupid. And they went, guys, if this is your plan, we've had a politically unacceptable level of casualties. So realistically, at this point, we would not be combat effective and we couldn't continue. So how are we going to overcome this? Slightly more grown-up conversation, but it did cause a bit of shock at the time. You know, political considerations are important. You know, it's not just a game. The Germans took it very seriously and didn't go, oh, it's only a computer simulation, I'll fight to the last man, the last bullet, because it doesn't matter. No, they treated it as it was supposed to be treated and a lot more realistically and in a more mature way than the Brits were. You can end up compromising the game design. It's a NATO war game. Every country must be represented. Oh, and I want to run it as a matrix game. Okay, so it's the Baltic. So I've got the Russians. I've got Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Germany, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Germany, Britain, America. You can only do one thing. So Russia gets one argument and NATO gets 15. It's not going to be a very balanced game, is it? So how do you overcome that? Well, we'll give the Russians 15 arguments. Doesn't work. The game design ignores cultural norms. It makes no acceptance that what is culturally acceptable for one party in the game is not in another. And then, of course, pandering to player bias. In this Sandhurst game, it was quite common that they come up with an attack which would end up attacking the enemy trench at 1-1 odds. You know, I'll have a section over here providing covering fire, I'll do this, and then I'll assault with the final section. And I go, why on earth do you think you're going to win? You know, it's an enemy section dug in cover, other than racism. You're making an assumption that the enemy is inferior to you. But the scenario explicitly talks about a near-peer enemy who's highly trained. So you need to be careful. The Brits assume they will win at 3-1 odds. The Brits assume they will win when defending at 3-1 odds. Hang on a minute. That's ridiculous. Attacking and defending at 3-1 odds and always winning? Wargaming is a bit fragile. You'll get people who go, oh my God, we're playing Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, hands up those who play Dungeons and Dragons here. Come on. Yeah, there we go. That would never have happened 5 years ago. The world is changing, thank God. Okay? But you will get people who will go, oh God, not another war game. People will, they don't really understand war game. They've seen one. If it was good, they might be positive about it. If it was bad, they might be very negative. Wargamers are very defensive. They like to stress the really good games. I've done it. I've done it today. I have a rich supply of good games where I can pluck examples out. I have rid my mind of all the terrible ones and the appalling mistakes I've made. Because, of course, thanks to those, I've learned so that my next game isn't quite as bad. And bad games threaten wargaming. You can have four or five really good games, and then you have a really bad game, and then you're not invited back at all. And that can be a bit of an issue. What happens? And then people go, we'll do something else. And then the attempt to get wargaming back in can be incredibly difficult. Perceptions, language, gamey type arguments. You need a 10 plus on 2d6. D&D. What's wrong with D&D? There's plenty of scholarly articles about everything I learned about life I learned from playing D&D. Role-playing games are really good for teaching adjudication skills. Maintaining a successful game is only possible for people who are good at adjudication. Cards, counters, meeples. What's a meeple? Hopefully you know what a meeple is. If not, I'm going to give a presentation on that later. Sometimes the game can be too immersive. You play the game, it's fun. It really works. We provided lunch so that people stayed in the bubble and didn't go somewhere else. And the result of it was absolutely compelling. But that's one game. If it's right, fantastic. If it's wrong, people can go away with a conviction that what happened in the game is what's going to happen in real life. You need to be careful. And if the game rules are boring, if it goes on for too long, players get bored. And when they get bored, they start looking at their phones and stuff, which is kind of indicating to me that perhaps I'll stop by now. Just because you had a successful game last time doesn't mean you'll have a successful game this time, because the reasons for doing the game may be different. The objectives of the game are different. Wargamers get very defensive and go, I'll do what worked last time. And I've covered this before. You need to be careful. One of the other things that comes up time and time again, people going, well, a computer's going to be better. Well, the answer is no, a computer is not going to be better. But explaining that is complicated. God, I gave a whole 45-minute lecture on why I think computers aren't necessarily the best way. The UK MOD is about to spend £10 million on a computer course of action evaluation tool. You know, full disclosure, it'll never work. But if we don't try it and prove it, then someone's going to spend £100 million on some piece of rubbish. Because actually what we should be able to do with a computer simulation is disprove the stupid stuff. We may not get to the imaginative course of action, but we certainly ought to be able to rule out the course of action that can't be completed because we don't have enough fuel that the enemy's too far away, or that sort of thing. The game might be fantastic, but does it actually meet the end? There's a lot of cyber games out there which have nothing to do with cyber. There is a game called Control-Alt-Hack, which was produced by one of the universities. It's a game about pizza delivery designed by Steve Jackson, where they change the names on the cards to be cyber-type things. It's nothing to do with cyber. It's not a proper cyber game. It just sounds like it. So you have to be careful. Now, getting people to do a war game is a big deal. We had the defense secretary here, okay? Defense minister. If he goes back and goes, hey, this is really great, I want to have a war game, can you imagine how big a deal that's going to be? As a result, the world, his wife, the mother-in-law, and the neighborhood cat are going to get involved. And it'll be so huge that A, he can't lose, and B, all sorts of other stuff's going to be added onto the game. Is that going to be immersive? Are we going to get that educational flow that gives us an understanding of the problem? Very dangerous. It's not about the game. It's about what are we trying to achieve. It's about understanding at the end of the day. Thank you very much. Any questions?